women voters nationwide actually prefer both cockroaches and hemorrhoids to Donald Trump.
So there was a piece that came out in the New York Times this week, front page story, where it talked about Donald Trump's relationship with women. There were a couple of issues with that story. We'll get into that in a little bit. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 161. Today, we're going to talk about the ladies, and then towards the end of the episode, we're going to get into the issue of spanking. You want to be here for the spanking. So, let's go. So, the New York Times story comes out, and quite a few people are named in the New York Times story. So, here's the problem. Fox News decides to take on the story because, of course, it's Fox News, and their job now, from here until November, is defending everything and anything that Donald Trump has done ever. That includes defending the crappy way that he's treated women. So, Fox News gets a few of the people, Carrie Prejean and some of the others, from the article to go on Fox News and say that, oh, yes, they did do an interview with the New York Times, but what the New York Times printed was not what they said. So it essentially looks like the New York Times story has been debunked. But wait, there's more.
I talk to women, okay? The women in my area are a microcosm, and they love Donald Trump. They love a strong man. They love a man that's going to protect their families in the future, their kids and their grandkids. They love a man that's going to have a strong military and who they can trust to use the military correctly, okay? Women love Donald Trump. That's nonsense. Tell Mr. Bloomberg to take his poll and go shove it someplace.
There's a sell job being done there. When you have to continue to tell people, he loves women, loves women. By the way, loves women. Did I mention loves women? Oh my God, he loves women. Have I said he loves women? Have I mentioned he loves? No. If you have to sell it to people, here's the thing. People know I love the ladies. And it's not because I walk around telling people, you know I love ladies? Have I told you I love ladies? Did you know I love ladies? Are you a lady? I love ladies. Are you a lady? I love ladies. No, people know because I am nice to the ladies, because I argue for feminism. Because I say nice things, because I'm not judgmental, and it comes out. If you have to constantly remind people, chances are you're probably not all that great. In this show, we're not going to get into the New York Times story, because a lot of parts of it can't be corroborated. But Mr. Trump does have a long history of misogyny. There is a better article. It's over at Vox by Dylan Matthews, and the headline is here. You can read every horrible thing that Donald Trump has said about women, and then you get to tell me that he's not a sexist. Some of the highlights. According to a 1992 New York Magazine piece, he once said, quote, women, you have to treat them like shh. Yes, and he says the full word. Of course, it's legendary how he talked about Rosie O'Donnell, declaring, Rosie O'Donnell is disgusting both inside and out. If you take a look at her, she's a slob. How does she even get on television? He told the Daily News he'd send one of his friends to pick up O'Donnell's girlfriend, and he'd think that it would be very easy because her partner, Kelly Carpenter, can you imagine the parents of Kelly, he said. Mom, Dad, I just fell in love with a big fat pig named Rosie. Can you imagine the expression on their face? He once told somebody on his apprentice show, Playmate Brandy Roderick, it would be a pretty picture of you dropping on your knees. He told Esquire, you know, it really doesn't matter what the media write as long as you've got a young, beautiful piece of ass. I would love to go into more of Donald Trump selling himself to the ladies, but it really just devolves from there. So the way that the Trump campaign has decided to run, because remember, Mr. Trump doesn't have any issues or any positions. So the way he's decided to run is to bring back the bad old days of the 90s. Once again, they're talking about Bill Clinton. No, Bill Clinton is not running for president, and they understand that. But because Bill Clinton is married to Hillary Clinton, they've decided that that's the way they're going to run. And it's not enough to say that Bill cheated, because people cheat. And if for Republicans, that doesn't seem so bad. So they have to go one step further. What they're doing is they're trying to say that Bill Clinton, hold your hats now, not a surprise, they're trying to say that he's a rapist.
Unless we are talking about, like what you just said, Bill Clinton, sexually assault, rape, so on and so forth, who cares? Best candidate, in my opinion, who can stop people in the United States from getting blown up and murdered. In my personal opinion, ask Kate Steinle's parents whether or not they care what Donald Trump said back in the 60s about women. I don't think they care.
Mm-hmm.
I think most women should care about is whether or not the children are safe in the United States. And, you know, if if women are so worried about this and that's going to stop them from voting for the person that's going to keep their children safe, then shame on them.
That is a caller who called into a Fox News radio program, The Brian Kilmeade Show, and on this particular day, Leslie Gold, a female, was sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. And she has the whole hour, all these callers, and she says, hey, does Donald Trump hate women? So that's the headline. Does Donald Trump hate? Well, no, I don't think anybody can make the case that he hates women, but he certainly is less respectful. And as you heard this caller say right there, he says, well, if it's Bill Clinton, we can say whatever the hell we want. But if it's Donald Trump, we really should just leave it the hell alone.
I hit on my wife relentlessly, you know, and I love my wife. I adore my wife, and it makes her feel good. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're not making a pass at the people you love, then it's a bad thing. I think the crossing the line thing, now, if I was hitting on women with other women, with my wife there, that would be crossing the line. But Donald Trump is none of my business. His relationships are his business, and I don't understand why the politically correct thing to do is invade everybody's business and tell them what their business should be. And that's just nonsense. I don't want to hit on somebody that looks like Rachel Maddow. You know, if my wife starts dressing like her, I'm probably going to hit on somebody else.
So remember, when it's Mr. Trump, why don't you just stay the hell out of his business? His business is his business. But if it's the Democrats, well, then all bets are off. And if you remind them of the terrible things that he said, they're very dismissive. Remember, they're not going to win the presidency without this particular constituency. After the 2012 loss, the RNC did what they called an autopsy. I think that's a wild autopsy, but fine, we'll go with it. They did an autopsy of their loss, and they realized that they didn't sound so great to Latinos. They really need Latinos. They realized that they didn't sound so great to the ladies. They really need to bring in the ladies. So what they've decided to run this time is a guy who calls Latinos rapists and murderers, drug dealers, and then they've also, and in that same package, that same wonderful package, a white nationalist, also inside that same package, a horrible misogynist. And when you point out the things that have been said by him, by folks around him, well, God, this PC culture has just gotten out of control. PC, remember, PC is code for, let us say all the horrible, misogynistic, racist things that we want to say, and you don't get to tell us that we can't say that, because if you tell us, then that means that you're the PC police.
I do think you're onto something with the PC culture, because it's in today's world, in this sort of PC, candy-ass cupcake generation we live in, you're not allowed to say anything about a woman's looks today for fear of objectifying her. You have to pretend that women have no looks.
A large part of the Donald's success is merely repeating the things that he hears on conservative talk radio. And I know this because I spend a fair amount of time listening to conservative talk radio. That's how I pulled these clips. I didn't get these from Media Matters. I listen to conservative talk radio. I go, I find it, cut it, put it into the show. Because when I hear him talk, he says exactly what I hear in conservative talk radio. See, the standard bearers of the party, the leaders of the party, are not the pundits and the folks over at the RNC or even the billionaire donors. The billionaire donors just put their money in when they find somebody repulsive enough to get behind. The party platform is written by conservative media, by conservative talk radio. And it doesn't matter if what's being said on there isn't true. You repeat it in public. See, the best way to get somebody to trust you is to tell them things that they already know or that they already believe to be true. If I walk up to you and say to you things that mirror your own positions about life, about politics, gender roles, whatever it is, right away, without even knowing me for 10 minutes, you're going to be more likely to trust me. And we're going to follow into a friendship much faster than we would otherwise. So Donald gets on the mic and just tells him all the things that he's heard on conservative talk radio, and he knows because he has spent a lot of time on conservative talk radio.
She's married to a man who was the worst abuser of women in the history of politics. She's married to a man who hurt many women, and Hillary, if you look and see, study, Hillary hurt many women, the women that he abused. And Hillary was an enabler. And she treated these women horribly. Just remember this. And some of those women were destroyed, not by him, but by the way that Hillary Clinton treated them after everything went down. So just remember that, folks. Just remember, when you're watching these phony, paid for by Wall Street ads put out by Hillary Clinton about Donald Trump, and just remember I said it, there is nobody that has more respect for women than me.
If he really had a lot of respect for women, and he believed there to be a lot of victims, he would not be dragging those victims through the mud and potentially opening up old wounds. So we have a misogynist, a racist, and a white nationalist running for the Republican Party in this election. And for the Democrats, much to my chagrin, and to the chagrin of all the people I love, it looks like Hillary is going to be the nominee. As a matter of fact, she's declaring already. Yeah, there's about half a dozen or so states left that haven't got the vote yet, but she's declaring that she is the candidate. Don't you tell her that she can't be the candidate. So with Trump, a misogynist, running against a woman, how is he going to run without seeming like a full-on misogynist? Well, Roger Stone. Perhaps you've never heard of him. You should get familiar with him because he is going to be a very integral part of the Trump campaign. And Roger Stone has decided to put together a super PAC. Now remember, Donald Trump was running saying, look how great I am, I'm self-funding. I don't have a super PAC. Well, now he has several super PACs. And one of those super PACs is run by a man named Roger Stone. And the name of the super PAC, now remember, Donald Trump's running against a woman for the presidency. The name of the super PAC that is supporting Donald Trump, hold on to your seats, it's actually called Rape PAC.
When we interviewed Roger Stone, he alluded to a super PAC that would be formed that would target Hillary Clinton. Well, now it has been revealed. It's actually called the Rape PAC. Brent Scherer for the Washington Free Beacon reports a new political action committee plans to give the many women who have been victimized by Bill and Hillary Clinton a platform to tell their stories. It's called the Rape Accountability Project for Education PAC, also known as the Rape PAC. It plans to put victims in both television and radio ads that will shed light on how the Clintons worked to silence and destroy women that accused the former president of rape.
They're not going to run on ideas in the Republican Party because they never do. They've decided to run a misogynistic man as the candidate, as the answer to misogyny, as the answer to the ills in society that afflict women. Not ideas, running on the idea that Hillary Clinton's husband is a rapist. There's another thing folks have to understand about Mr. Trump. He's not going to gaff out. He's the most horrible person in the world right now. And he's not going to gaff out. No matter what horrible thing that he says, it only makes him more popular. It only makes his numbers go up in the polls. He's not going to gaff out. So the Clinton campaign has decided to try to run against him based on what a misogynist he is. And Priorities USA, another super PAC, this time a super PAC that is supporting Ms. Clinton, they've run a couple of ads of their own.
Nobody respects women more than Donald Trump, that I can tell you.
I'm not supporting.
Would you cut off funding
to Planned Parenthood? Yes, I would. You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion, yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Priorities USA Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So that one is the more mellow one. And they test these in front of focus groups, of course. And if that one doesn't get them, then this one will definitely drive the point home.
You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Does she have a good body? No. Does she have a fat ass? Absolutely.
You like girls that are 5'1", they come up to you, know where?
If Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
I view a person who's flat-chested is very hard to be a 10.
And you can tell them to go themselves.
Does Donald Trump really speak for you? Priorities USA Action is responsible for the content of this advertising.
One of the biggest hits on Donald Trump is, first of all, he's such a war hawk. And this is one of the things that's going to make it complicated for the Democrats, because this is where people can't tell the difference between the Democratic and Republican parties, is because there's not a lot of daylight between them when it comes to foreign policy. And one of the hits on Donald Trump is for being such a war hawk. Boy, he sure didn't do any time in the military. He, of course, has said that he felt like he was in the military because he went to military school or whatever. And also, dig this, in an appearance on the Howard Stern show, when he talked about avoiding STDs from his casual sex, right, where he would just hook up with people. And he called avoiding STDs his personal Vietnam. That's not a joke. He actually said that. Maybe that's how he's going to claim veteran status. We need to stop lying to ourselves and thinking that this man doesn't have a chance. He does. And he's not going to gaff out. It doesn't matter what horrible thing he says or how honest he is when he's in public. He's not going to gaff out.
I love the poorly educated.
And the poorly educated love him, and they want him to be in the White House, and they see him as the strong man. And ladies, if you don't understand that, well, then damn you. Shame on you, ladies. There is a little bit of daylight, though. Fret not. Let not your heart be troubled, or whatever positive words would make you feel better. There is a little bit of light for us, okay? He is seen as very unfavorable. Now, unfortunately, so is Hillary Clinton. He is the most disliked candidate ever to run for president, and she's the second most disliked. So once again, unfortunately, not a lot of daylight between them. So a number of years back, probably about 3-4 years ago, PPP decided to do a poll about the Congress, which is run by Republicans. And they wanted to see how they matched up to other things, bugs, venereal diseases, things of that nature. And I thought it was pretty funny, but it was also pretty telling. How does a Congress that nobody likes, approval ratings, down there in the single digits, how does a Congress that nobody likes become a Congress and then become a Congress again? People are crying out for work where they would like to have some real work done in the Congress, please. And it's just not happening. Certainly not with this Congress. So PPP does this thing, and it's pretty hilarious. Matching them up with car accidents and eating all the rest. And this time they decided to do the same kind of poll. This time only with Donald Trump, though.
New national polling from PPP finds that by a considerable margin, the Republican Party's presumptive nominee for president, Donald Trump, is less popular than lice. Question 23 from the poll, and I quote, what do you have a higher opinion of, Donald Trump or lice? The proportion of Americans who say they have a higher opinion of Donald Trump is 28%. The proportion of Americans who say they have a higher opinion of lice, 54%. So Donald Trump is losing to lice by 26 points. This new national polling also finds that Mr. Trump is viewed less favorably than not just lice, but also traffic jams, used car salesmen, hipsters, the DMV, jury duty, the band Nickelback, and also root canals. That said, there is also a little sunshine for Mr. Trump in this new national poll, which we've exclusively got tonight. And the good news for him is that he does beat both cockroaches and hemorrhoids. It's narrow, but a win is a win. Donald Trump is held in higher esteem than hemorrhoids by a margin of 6 points, and he's held in higher esteem than cockroaches by a margin of 4 points. That's the good news. Now, there is bad news about this good news, which is that if you just ask women voters, turns out his win over both cockroaches and hemorrhoids, the wins go away. Women voters nationwide actually prefer both cockroaches and hemorrhoids to Donald Trump.
I'm not necessarily pivoting to the general just yet. I'm kind of easing that way. I'm a little bit in denial about Bernie Sanders because we fought pretty hard. We got all these big rallies, spent a lot of money getting him up there. But, you know, these things tend to pan out the way that it's panning out right now. So I'm not necessarily pivoting to the general totally, but here in the next 6 weeks, we are going to know who the Democratic nominee is. But I feel like I should start putting this information out there now. And I feel like it's not enough just to point out what a horrible person he is. We need to talk about the RNC as a party, the Republicans as a party, and the policies that they would put in place if he became the president. Because you're going to get... It looks like, because a couple weeks ago, it looked like nobody in the Republican Party was going to get behind him. Now, they're almost all behind him. The polls are somewhere between 80 and 90% of the party now is comfortable with him as their leader. And he, as a president, would rain down hell on Muslims, rain down hell on Latinos, and Ladies, the hell would rain down on you as well. Chris Christie works for the Donald Trump team right now, the Donald Trump presidential team. And he's one of the guys in charge helping him find a vice president. And Chris Christie, here's the headline from Think Progress, vetoed an equal pay bill, calling it business unfriendly. Quote, New Jersey lawmakers want to require employers to pay women the same as men for essentially the same work. But Governor Chris Christie thinks that they went too far. Now, this passed overwhelmingly. And when it made it to his desk, he killed it. The bill that passed both chambers of the state's legislature would have banned employers from paying women less for substantially similar work as men, and would only have allowed different pay rates between genders if employers could prove it was based on something besides sex. Good so far, right? Such as education, experience, or performance. The similarity of the work would have been determined based on the required responsibilities, effort, and skills for jobs across all employers' operations. Most equal pay laws require the same pay for the exact same work, but New Jersey's bill would have been much stronger, reaching beyond the exact same job women to be paid equally if they're doing the same tasks in a different role. Chris Christie, though, specifically objected to this piece of the bill, calling it nonsensical and saying that it makes New Jersey very business unfriendly. While women in New Jersey make 80% of what a man makes on average, slightly more than the country as a whole, that means that they're missing out on as much as $12,000 a year on average earnings. The way that the Republicans deal with an issue is they simply say it doesn't exist. Racism. No, it doesn't exist. Misogyny. Nope, it doesn't exist. Unequal pay. Nope, it doesn't exist. They simply pretend it doesn't exist. And that's why Chris Christie called this nonsensical. When we talk about equal, we mean that women should get the same rights as men. Rights as men. As a gentleman, I'm not going to mention his name, but he made a video, and you can look it up if you want, where he makes the case for beating up women. This isn't a joke, and he's not just trolling. He really thinks that we should be able to beat up women.
I support gender equality. I think men and women are equal and should be treated as such. Which is why, if a woman ever hits a man, she should be treated as if she was equal to men.
You know, I always found it to be a funny contradiction when feminists complain about how evil gender inequality is, yet rely on gender inequality to excuse some women from their destructive behavior. Because last I checked, if a man initiated physical violence by slapping me on the face, I would be justified in punching him. In fact, it wouldn't matter what gender was involved. Any person who starts a fight by physically assaulting someone deserves a good punch in the face, whether they're a man or a woman. Because you see, I believe in gender equality.
He says, oh, you want to be equal? Then I get to punch you if you punch me. The better thing to do with respect to violence is to de-escalate a situation. I don't believe in violence in any of its forms. I find all of it unacceptable. But this guy, upset, clearly upset at equality, gender equality, says, you know what? You want to get paid the same as a man? You want the same rights as men? You don't want to be... Fine, then I'm going to punch you.
Well, ladies, do you ever feel like you're not getting the respect that you deserve around the office? Well, it could actually just be your fault.
There is a consensus among a lot of folks about Beyonce. And especially with ladies. They love Beyonce. And hey, Beyonce is great, right? And after Beyonce came out recently and talked about how she got cheated on by Jay-Z, it became this rallying point for women. Because, I mean, they know how, a lot of them know how that feels. But there's a problem with what Beyonce is doing. And it's a problem that all manufacturers tend to engage in. There's a story by The Sun, the British Sun, where the headline, Beyonce's Ivy Park accused of paying factory workers 63 cents an hour. Ivy Park is a clothing line that Beyonce makes. Of course, it's made in factories, and then she stamps Ivy Park on it, and then she charges you an ungodly amount of money. So the reports are with Ivy Park is Beyonce's collaboration with a shop over in Sri Lanka is her clothes are being produced in inhumane conditions. Quote, Beyonce says she wants her Ivy Park gym gear to support and inspire women, while Topshop, the people making it, claims it wants to empower women through sport. But poverty-stricken seamstresses making some of the clothes in the factory in Sri Lanka make just, and they do this in pounds, 4.3 pounds a day. When it would take them, remember, more than a month's wages to buy one pair of Beyoncé's leggings, which go for £100. The workers, mostly young women from poor rural villages, can only afford to live in boarding houses, and they work more than 60 hours a week. Most are reluctant to speak out for fear of losing their jobs. There's an argument being made in the Republican Party right now that what we need to do is get rid of the minimum wage. There should be no minimum wage whatsoever, and then that will magically drive up everybody's wages. When you get rid of the minimum wage, or when you argue that the minimum wage should be even lower, what you're saying is you want to pay people as little as possible. Chris Rock made a joke about this once, and he said, when somebody pays you the minimum wage, that's your employer saying, I would pay you less if I could, but it is not legal. So, the factory, paying these women 63 cents an hour, they said, hey, by the way, they're making double what everybody else makes. The brand has since responded to the Sun's allegations, stating that Ivy Park has a rigorous ethical trading program. We are proud of our sustained efforts in terms of factory inspections and audits, and our teams worldwide work very closely with our suppliers and their factories to ensure compliance. As for the low wages, Women's Wear Daily reports that the factory, which also produces apparel for Speedo, Nike, Lululemon, and Patagonia, pays workers double the Sri Lankan minimum wage. The Sun story said the mostly female workers earn £4.3 a day, or $6.17, and could never afford to buy a pair of the leggings, which cost £100, or $144 American. However, the daily minimum wage in Sri Lanka is 400 rupees, or £1.87, or $2.68. That means that they are earning double what the minimum wage is, but the minimum wage is already a starvation slave wage. And Beyonce, shame on you, girl. Beyonce has yet to respond to this. And I remember when this happened with Kathy Lee Gifford back in the 90s. And I understand that this is our policy. We make things outside of America and we have them made by slaves. But you do not get to say, you as a woman, Ms. Beyonce, that you are empowering women by enslaving women in Sri Lanka to make your clothes. Now, I understand I'm going to get a lot of hatred right now because I'm coming down on Beyonce. And Beyonce does not get to say that she just didn't know. She's just too far removed. She's out playing concerts right now. And that's all fine and dandy. You do your thing, girl. And that's all right. But you got to understand, you have to be closer with your product. You have to understand the conditions that it's being made in. And I'm not buying the thing that you're for the ladies. If you're allowing these women to be enslaved, double the minimum wage. If the minimum wage is 33 cents and you're paying them 66 cents, I'm sorry, but you are still screwing them.
Do you have balls?
I believe so.
When we talk about policy, I'm fairly certain everybody knows what revenge porn is. And if you don't, real quick. Revenge porn is essentially where, well, in this age of pictures and videos and being so ubiquitous because we have these things ready to make pictures and videos right on our phones, sometimes folks will take naughty pictures or videos of each other. And then sometimes people break up and then those things end up on the internet. And it embarrasses the person that's in the video or picture that did not want it out there. Then it's called revenge porn. So there have been more than a few state houses that have decided to ban revenge porn. But there's one gentleman in particular who got a little bit of poetic justice because he was against banning revenge porn. This from the Daily Beast from September of last year. Indiana Representative Judd McMillan has resigned after his sex tape leaked onto the internet without his consent. He blocked the revenge porn bill that would have made the leak illegal. Representative Judd McMillan resigned his role as the majority leader after his cell phone sent a sexually explicit video to an unknown number of recipients. McMillan, a Republican who helped pass a 2015 religious freedom law allowing businesses to ban gay customers, claimed that his phone had been out of my control for 24 hours after being stolen in Canada. Unfortunately for McMillan, it's perfectly legal for someone to distribute pornographic video of him without his consent. That's because as a member of the House of Committee on Courts and Criminal Code, McMillan helped block the bill that would have criminalized revenge porn. I believe this is not just the case with Mr. McMillan. This was a bill that would have protected women by and large. Women are usually the victims more often than men when it comes to revenge porn. So he decides to go ahead and block this bill that is largely going to help ladies. Then he loses his cell phone. And he's got pictures of himself doing things to himself. And I'm not going to describe those things because they've been described and the video is out there if you want to see it. It's probably pretty gross. I haven't seen it. I've only heard. And so he blocks this bill that would have protected him too. And then he realizes, but I believe the reason he did this, this is something that would have protected ladies. And you know what? To hell with them. And that seems to be the position of the GOP. Ladies, they would very much like it if you would turn out and vote for them, but they are not going to help you at all. What the? Hey, you want something? You got to do it yourself. Don't be asking for laws that help you. Hey, the Republican Party stands for one thing. They stand for helping large multinational corporations and rich guys, preferably rich white guys, and that's it. Ladies, give us your votes, turn around, go back to the kitchen. That's all they want from you.
Should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
Look.
This is not something you can dodge.
If abortion is a crime
or abortion is murder, you have to deal with it under the law. Should abortion be punished?
Well, people in certain parts of the Republican Party and conservative Republicans would say, yes, they should be punished.
How about you?
I would say that it's a very serious problem, and it's a problem that we have to decide on. It's very hard.
But you're forbidding
it. Are you going to say put them in jail? Is that what you're talking about?
Because you say you want to ban it.
I am pro-life, yes.
What is ban? How do you ban abortion? How do you actually do it?
Well, you know, you'll go back to a position like they had where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Yeah.
But you have to ban it.
They go to somebody who flunked out of medical school.
Are you Catholic?
Yes, I think
how do you feel about the Catholic Church's position?
I accept the teaching authority of my church on moral issues.
But do you know their position on abortion?
Yes, I do.
And do you concur with that position?
I concur with their moral position, but legally question. Here's my problem.
But let me ask you, but what do you say about
it's not funny.
Your church? Yeah, it's really not a funny thing. What do you say about your church? They're very, very strong.
They're allowed to, but the churches make their moral judgments, but you running for president of the United States will be chief executive of the United States. Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents, 10 years,
I don't know. That I don't know.
You take positions on everything else?
I do take positions on everything else. It's a very complicated position.
Tell me what the law should be. Just tell me what the law should be. You said you're pro-life.
I am pro-life.
What's that
with
mean?
With exceptions. I am pro-life. I have not determined what the punishment would
Why
be.
Why not?
Because I haven't determined it.
By saying you're pro-life, you mean you want to ban abortion. How do you ban abortion without some kind of sanction? Then you get into that very tricky question of a sanction. A fine on human life, which you call murder?
It'll have to be determined.
A fine? Imprisonment for a young woman who finds herself pregnant?
It will have to be determined.
I wanted to play the entire exchange because I thought it was very important to hear the whole thing. And then, of course, Mr. Trump went on to say that there shouldn't be any sort of punishment for the man, just the woman. It's all on the woman. He, of course, later on tried to walk back those comments without a lot of success. And a lot of people came out and damned him for saying that. But then he's gotten more and more as of late to be with that position. Yes, it's going to be banned. Yes, I'm going to pick judges who will overturn Roe v. Wade. This is happening state by state right now. Texas is one of the most famous places, because they have, through heavy, heavy, heavy regulations, have managed to shut down most of that state's abortion clinics. So we're told if we shut down the abortion clinics, that will end abortion, or maybe that will lead to fewer abortions, right? Well, it turns out it doesn't. It just leads to more women not having access to that critical care when they need it. It also has led to a lot of self-inducing.
According to a new study released today, between 100,000 and 240,000 women in Texas aged 18 to 49 have tried to induce an abortion at home. This is the first study of its kind. Run by the University of Texas, the study attempted to show how prevalent self-induced abortions are. The revelations come in the wake of Texas legislators' attempts to limit women's access to abortions. The Texas law, known as HB 2, is the state's more strict abortion law. It led to the closure of more than half of the state's clinics and is currently being challenged in the U.S. Supreme Court.
A Texas Policy Evaluation Project study released in November of last year asserted that nearly a quarter million of the women in the state may have induced abortions themselves because of the onerous regulations that were put on. According to the study, the advent of onerous legislation imposing restrictions on legal abortion access and the availability of abortion drugs, largely from Mexico, have combined to make self-induced abortions in Texas less rare than in most states. The bill that essentially banned abortion was called HB2. So how do women self-induce? And by the way, when it comes to pregnancy, when it comes to babies, when it comes to children, this is not just a woman's issue. Yes, they are the ones who have the burden of being pregnant. They are the ones who have the burden of carrying it. They are the only ones who feel the physical pain of that thing being born. I think it's not another, the baby being born. They are also the ones who have to deal with being pregnant for 9 months, and then a lot of the times it just absolutely annihilates their bodies. But you do what you do for love. I have three children, and it's love without end for me. And when my wife was pregnant, I was pretty young, and I wasn't as responsive as I could have been. Certainly not when she was pregnant with the first one, but with the other two, I was much more responsive. This is an issue that affects us all. You don't get to attack women just because they're the ones who actually carry the baby. So how do they self-induce? Well, when the abortion clinics closed, the coat hanger clinics in the alley will still be open. One of the big ways that they do it is the women will get somebody, a boyfriend, somebody, to punch them in the stomach until they miscarry. And then, of course, there's the dangerous thing of going on the internet, watching internet videos, and concocting things to get yourself to self-induce. It's horrible. It's barbaric. Women shouldn't have to go through with it. If conservatives are going to consistently cut the social safety net that helps women, that helps families, and then cut their access to abortion, if they decide that they don't want to carry the child to term, they decide that it's too expensive to raise a child, they're not ready to raise a child, maybe the dad's not going to be around. You don't get to tell people what they're going to do with their bodies with respect to that. If you're going to cut the social safety nets, which give the women an out if they do decide to carry the baby to term. But if you're going to cut services, you're going to cut access. You're just going to get more things like this.
Now to a story that has captured the attention of hundreds of you on our Facebook page. It is heartbreaking and it is disturbing. A Murfreesboro mom is in jail tonight, charged with attempted first-degree murder after police say she attempted to self-abort her baby.
This may be a first regionally. I can't think of ever hearing about something like this.
This case caught everyone in the Murfreesboro Police Department off guard.
She wanted to kill the child.
Sergeant Kyle Evans tells me this woman, 31-year-old Anna Yoka, wanted to end her pregnancy 6 months into term.
The mother had gone upstairs, drawn a bath with warm water, and attempted to self-abort her own child with a coat hanger in the bathtub.
But during the alleged abortion attempt, police say Yoka started bleeding to the point where she was worried about her health. So her boyfriend drove her here to St. Thomas in Murfreesboro before she was eventually transported to St. Thomas Midtown in Nashville. While in the hospital, Yoka apparently made it very clear she did not want the child.
The mother had made very incriminating statements and very concerning statements regarding wanting to end the child's life.
But the child was born, weighing just 1.5 pounds, and now requires around-the-clock care.
Those injuries will affect this child for the rest of his life. Those injuries include damage to the heart, damage to the eyes and lungs, all caused at the hands of his own mother.
I did some checking and found that Tennessee law prohibits abortions after the second trimester.
And you can see this happened.
Adding, Evans says,
September,
to the disturbing nature of this crime.
And the whole time she was concerned for her health, her safety, and never gave any attention to the health and safety of the unborn child.
And it's not just the Republican Party that's giving a voice, that is helping this legislation along when it comes to anti-choice extremists. The headline over at Media Matters is reproductive rights organizations call out PBS for giving an anti-choice extremist a town hall platform. Groups call inclusion of Troy Newman in a PBS town hall disappointing, downright frightening, and potentially dangerous. Following a showing, quoting here, from the pro-gun safety documentary, The Armor of Light, PBS is airing a town hall discussion on guns and faith, including anti-choice extremist Troy Newman. Troy Newman is the head of Operation Rescue. Troy Newman is also the guy who is publishing the addresses and phone numbers of abortion doctors without explicitly saying, go kill these folks. But then, of course, that's exactly what's happening. And abortion doctors are being targeted and they're being killed. We don't talk about these things. We consider this to simply be a woman's issue. But this is not a woman's issue. And I understand that I'm talking about this in the context of an episode that largely has to do with women's issues. But I want to make a larger point. This affects us all. And that baby, which has been horribly mangled, but is still alive, if you're really concerned about the cost of healthcare, that child is going to get healthcare. And we have a private for-profit healthcare system right now. And that private for-profit healthcare system cares for everybody and just passes on the cost to everyone else. And if you're really concerned about the cost, what do you think that's going to cost? And how could this situation have been avoided? Perhaps if she had access to doctors. Perhaps if she had access to mental health counselors. Perhaps. But we in America, we consider that too onerous, too expensive. And we are not our brother's keeper. We don't want to deal with that stuff.
We've had 8 debates before. This is our 9th. We've not had one question about a woman's right to make her own decisions about reproductive health care. Not one question. And in the meantime, we have states, governors, doing everything they can to restrict women's rights. We have a presidential candidate by the name of Donald Trump saying that women should be punished, and we are never asked about this. It goes to the heart of who we are as women, our rights, our autonomy, our ability to make our own decisions, and we need to be talking about that and defending Planned Parenthood from these outrageous attacks.
Your response.
The Republicans have even gone so far as to actually blame women for being raped. At a town hall, John Kasich was asked by a woman. She says, a lot of assaults are happening. I feel very vulnerable. What can we do about this? My answer is to raise better men. My answer is to teach men that it is not okay to treat a woman like that. But John Kasich's answer was much different.
I have 16-year-old daughters. And I don't even like to think about it. You know? I also give you one bit of advice. Don't go to parties where there's a lot of alcohol.
That's the answer. Don't go to parties where there's a lot of alcohol. Blaming the victim. Once again, when we are ready to exploit, when we are more than willing to exploit roughly half our population, roughly half our populace, we're willing to exploit them and see them as second-class citizens, to treat them terribly, to put regulations on their bodies. When we have a society that is willing to do that, there really is no limit to what we're able to do. And when we do that, we become more likely to see women as less than people. And when they're seen as less than people, they become seen as objects. And when they become seen as objects in a world where war still sounds like a good idea to a lot of people, that's when you get things like comfort women.
After 12 recent rounds of negotiations and decades of tension between Japan and South Korea, a deal is finally reached to resolve the conflict over comfort women. Many of them Korean women who were forced to serve as sex slaves in Japanese military brothels in the years leading up to and during World War II. If the Japanese government carries out its end of the deal by putting up around $8 million for a foundation to support the surviving women, South Korea will consider the matter irreversibly resolved. The announcement of the deal comes with a message that Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe again expresses his most sincere apologies and remorse to all the women who suffered. It also has the government taking responsibility for the military's use of comfort women. But one group representing survivors says the apology is too vague and it fails to make explicitly clear the Japanese government's role in perpetuating the crimes against women.
Quoting from Jezebel, at the end of World War II, an estimated 200,000 South Korean women were were forced by the Imperial Japanese Army to work in brothels as comfort women, a euphemized term for sexual slavery for the Japanese military. South Korea accepted Japan's reconciliatory apology and offered to contribute 1 billion yen or $8.3 million to a victims fund, but there's only 46 of these women still alive. The issue of comfort women was a matter which, with the involvement of the military and authorities of the day, severely injured the honor and dignity of many women, said Japan's foreign minister Fumio Kishida at a press conference. In this regard, the government of Japan painfully acknowledges responsibility. Quote, our job was to revitalize the soldiers, said Kim Bok-dong, who was 14 years old when she was forced to work at a comfort station. 14 years old.
Kim Bok-dong is one of those women forced to leave her Korean village at the age of 14. She says she was used for 5 years as a sex slave.
I can't put into words the scars it left me with. It still keeps me awake at night. It went on for such a long time. By the time the sun went down, I couldn't use my lower body at all. In my old age, I couldn't have a single person who can call me mother.
It really is important that we see all people as people. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous, but when we think that it's a good idea to level hate against other races, when we think it's a good idea to level hate against other genders, when we think it's okay to level any kind of hatred or violence towards our fellow man, where there's no telling where you're going to end up. We need to learn to respect one another, and we need to learn to be responsive to one another. If you go into any restroom in America, you will find tissue paper. Why? Because that is a public good. Everyone uses it, everyone needs it, and it's there. But women have had a hard time finding tampons when they need them. Because we see this as another thing that is really only just a women's issue. But more and more, our attitude on this is beginning to change, and it should, because we need to be responsive to one another's needs. This from WNYC.
So you're just turning this, and then a pad comes out.
High school senior Celine Sierra is showing me a little piece of history.
A tampon comes out, yeah.
Celine and her friends are at the High School for Arts and Business in Queens, New York City's first public school with a 100% free pad and tampon dispenser. They and the principal invited me into the bathroom to take a look. When the dispenser showed up in September, it caught Celine's friend Emily Torres off guard.
I kind of stared at it for a little because usually when you see those dispensers, they won't say free. So, you know, it's bold. It's 25 cents, 50 cents, whatever the case is. And so I was like almost scared to use it.
But just for a second, and pretty quickly, this very industrial piece of machinery became a game changer. It used to be, if their periods made a surprise appearance, they'd have to go to the nurse's office for supplies. New York City Council member Julissa Ferreras helped the school get the dispenser.
You go to the nurse's office when you're sick. Getting your period just says that you're healthy.
By the way, it's BS that I have to say these things. It's BS that I have to point these things out. These should be standard things. Everybody should know these things. But for some reason, we don't. We need to learn to start treating one another better. We need to learn to start treating our ladies better. And we need to stop normalizing hatred. We need to stop normalizing racism. We need to stop normalizing misogyny. We need to stop normalizing all forms of hatred because it isn't doing anybody any good and it isn't getting us anywhere. Yes, I have been railing here in favor of ladies' rights. But women's rights are humans' rights. African Americans, Latinos, rights, human rights for all human beings. Yeah, fine, I'm getting a little preachy, but deal with it. Because we are destroying each other. We are destroying ourselves. And I don't know why that sounds like a good idea to anybody.
Spanking has long been a popular, albeit controversial, form of punishment. According to UNICEF, as many as 80% of parents worldwide spank their kids. However, a new study published in the Journal of Family Psychology found the more kids are spanked, the more likely they are to defy their parents, show aggression, and experience mental health problems. And the spanking was not associated with short or long-term compliance. Studying 50 years of research and 160,000 kids, Elizabeth Gershaw from the University of Texas found spanking actually left unintended detrimental outcomes. Telling Newsbeat Social, quote, families would be better off if parents learned more about positive discipline strategies and the importance of providing love, warmth, and emotional support to their children.
The Bible has been used to justify an awful lot of things. If you go back far enough, you can find where folks were using it to make the case for slavery. You can find where they make the case for misogyny, and you can also find where they make the case for using violence against your own children. The word is, spare the rod, spoil the child. My mother used to say to me when I was growing up, it says right here in the Bible, don't spare the rod. And yes, we suffered at the hand of our own parents. You say, well, you can't call it abuse if it's simply a parent striking a child. But when you respond with violence rather than reasoning, all you're teaching is violence. And violence only leads to more violence. But you say, you can't give me parenting tips. So you deal with your kid how you deal with your kid, and I'll deal with my kid how I deal with my kid. No. When you use violence against anybody, you use violence against other races, you use violence against other women, you use violence against your own children, you're sending the wrong message, and you're not getting the intended outcome that you want. You believe that you're simply teaching them a lesson. You believe that perhaps your abuse is going to keep them out of trouble and keep them out of prison. My case in point is this. All of my brothers have been to prison. One is currently in prison. It didn't do any good. We were beaten on a daily basis. And I have one brother who's not only served time in prison, but I no longer talk to him because he's taken to beating up his girlfriend as well. But wait a minute. We were spanked all the time. We got our asses whooped. Didn't it make us better people? Didn't it make us more disciplined? No, it made them violent. So me, what did it do to me? I'm a good guy. I've never been to prison. Clearly it worked on me, right? No, it didn't. I, by nature, am a gentle person. Gentle, happy, diplomatic. But I have a temper. And I can go from zero to dick in no time. And I don't like it. And I've realized that my deep-seated anger and aggression probably comes from the violence at the hand of people that I loved when I was growing up. And it wasn't enough to get beaten at home. I would then go to school and be beaten up by the standard school bullies. And that lasted all the way through high school. Now, I don't go around beating people, and I don't hit my children, but I'm aggressive at times, and I don't particularly care for the way that I feel. I don't care for the fact that I have that deep inside of me. I see it as very, very destructive.
Researchers from the Universities of Texas and Michigan recently published an extensive study of children who are spanked. The professors detailed how spanking children actually does more harm than good, and in fact generally makes kids more likely be defiant and aggressive. So Elizabeth Gershoff is the lead author of this study. She's an associate professor of human development and family sciences at the University of Texas. There was Andrew Grogan-Kaler, who is the co-author. He's an associate professor at the University of Michigan School of Social Work. So they did this really extensive study. It was a 5-decade-long study with more than 160,000 children studied. They published this in the April edition of the Journal of Family Psychology. Elizabeth Gershoff has this to say. She says, we found that spanking was associated with unintended detrimental outcomes and was not associated with more immediate or long-term compliance, which are parents' intended outcomes when they discipline their children.
When I told my wife that I was going to do this segment on this show, I said that I was going to make the bold statement that if you hit your children, then you do not love them. And she warned against that. And fine, I will not make that case. But I will say that if you strike anybody that you say you love, if you use violence against anybody that you say you love, I am now calling your love into question. This from the University of New Hampshire, a new book by Murray Strauss, founder and co-founder of the Family Research Lab and professor emeritus of sociology at the University of New Hampshire, brings together more than four decades of research. This is another study that makes the definitive case against spanking, including how it slows cognitive development and increases antisocial and criminal behavior. Apropos to what I said earlier, the primordial violence shows that the reasons parents hit those they love includes a lot more than just correcting misbehavior. It provides evidence of the effect spanking has on children and what could be done to end it. The book features longitudinal data from 7,000 U.S. families as well as results from a 32-nation study and presents the latest research on the extent to which spanking is used in different cultures and the subsequent effects of its use on children and society. Quote, research shows that spanking corrects misbehavior, but it also shows that spanking does not work better than other modes of correction, such as timeout, explaining, and depriving a child of privileges. Moreover, the research shows clearly the gains from spanking come at a big cost. This includes weakening the tie between children and parents and increasing the probability that the child will hit other children and their parents as adults, or hit a marital partner or somebody that they're dating. Spanking also slows down mental development and lowers the probability of a child doing well in school. And spanking has even made an appearance on the presidential campaign trail.
We do know that Hillary told her daughter Chelsea, well, gosh, I knew it was a terrorist attack while we were out telling the American people it wasn't. You know, I'll tell you, in my house, if my daughter Catherine, the 5-year-old, says something that she knows to be false, she gets a spanking. Well, in America, the voters have a way of administering a spanking.
Violence against his 5-year-old. What did a kid do to be taught the language of violence at 5 years old? In closing, it doesn't matter when you're using it. It never, ever works. If you start wars and blow people up, that's not going to solve the problem. If somebody says something you don't like and you challenge them to a fight, that's not going to solve the problem. If your child is acting up and you decide that you're going to hit them with your hand or a spatula or a baseball bat or whatever the hell you're thinking of, you're only making the problem worse. Even if it seems to correct things in the short term, in the long term, you're only creating more problems. I will not say that you do not love, but I will call into question your love if you're using violence against the people that you claim you love. If you're smart, if you're thoughtful, if you're reasonable, pass that on. Teach your children reasoning skills. If you cannot reason with another human being, then you are of lesser intelligence. They're children. You should be able to make a case when talking with them. And you should be able to do so without using violence. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. I know, lots of heavy subjects, right? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. And of course, QV Station still has an app as well. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes store or at the Podbean store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can subscribe so that you never, ever miss an episode of this fella right here. Hello there. Questions, hate mail, comments, just email. My name is Melvin, tfycpo@gmail.com. Send me whatever the hell you want. Send me pictures of your cats or hate mail, whatever. I'll take it all. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you, yes you, the listener, for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.